Okay, good evening everyone. Let us start our meditation session. Please find a comfortable posture. Keep your back straight. Gently close your eyes. Relax your body. Take a few deep, long breaths. Release them. And relax your body. Relax your mind. Feel your entire body. Let us start by practicing loving kindness. Send thoughts of loving kindness to yourself first. Please repeat these positive and loving thoughts in your mind. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be free from anger. May I be free from suffering. May I be free from jealousy. May I be free from danger. May I be free from illness. May I be well. May I be well. May I be well. Now, as we experience loving kindness, let us radiate the same loving thoughts to our friends. Send the same thoughts to our teachers. Send the same thoughts to our mother. Send the same thoughts to our father. Send the same thoughts to our sister. Send the same thoughts to our brother. Send the same thoughts to our relatives. May my father be well, happy and peaceful. May my mother be well, happy and peaceful. May my brother be well, happy and peaceful. May my sister be well, happy and peaceful. May my friends be well, happy and peaceful. May my relatives be well, happy and peaceful. Now send your thoughts to the whole world. May all beings be free from anger. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be free from danger. May all beings be free from jealousy. May all beings be free from illness and injury. May all beings be well. 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 Now slowly you turn your attention to your breath. Every breath you take in and take out is mindfully. Focus on your natural ordinary breath. focus on your breath. Breathe in, breathe out. Our mind is always going to past and future. That's our mind nature. Please bring in your mind to the present. Breathe in, breathe out. Now observe your mind and observe your body. Your body is relaxed and your mind is calm and peaceful. Please bring your palms together in front of your heart. Make a wish for yourself. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May peace be with you. Thank you very much. Open your eyes. Open your page number 4. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Hatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Anicca patta sankhara. Upada vaya dhammino. Upajjitva nirujjanti. Desang upa samosuko. Sabbe satta avera hontu. Sabbe satta abhyapajja hontu. Sabbe satta aniga hontu. Sabbe satta sukhi attanam pariharantu. Mano bubbang gama dhamma. Mano setta mano maya. Manasache padutena. Vasativa karotiva. Tato nam dukkhamang veti. Chakkang vahato padam. Mano pubbang gama dhamma. Mano setta mano maya. Manasache pasannena. Asativa karotiva. Tato nam sukha mang veti. Chayava anapayini. Okay, today by Dhamma Talk and Create, we kindly invite giving Dhamma Talk.
Thank you very much for leading us in meditation, Bhante. It was wonderful. I'd given one of these talks a few months ago, I guess, and I prepared for it. I'm actually in graduate school. I'm studying to become a chaplain. So the last one I prepared, I thought, well, I'd create a little story to tell. And I still got very academic about it. And I didn't want to do that tonight because I realized that even though I'm kind of a nerd with that stuff, and probably there are nerds out there as well that would appreciate it, I wanted to do something that would maybe resonate a little bit more because I realized that a lot of the academics, when it comes to doing academic work, you're building an argument, you're creating postulations, you're coming up with ideas, concepts, and then you're supporting those ideas and concepts with other people's ideas and concepts, and it gets very convoluted. And the reason we do that is because we trick ourselves into thinking that's knowledge. And what it is it's really more of a safety net. Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to find security and certainty, right? So by coming up with these big grand ideas, we find that certainty. And what that really does is we're trying to mask our fear, I think. Because when we don't know, it can be a scary thing. So rather than coming up with some, and by the way, there is a place for that. There's a place for academics and coming up with these grand ideas. But we often, again, we think of that as a safety net, like a spider web builds a web. And yes, it's very strong for a while, but as it's exposed to the elements, it becomes weaker, it becomes frayed, and eventually it blows away. So these ideas are great, but when you really need them the most, when things get really dark or hectic, if you don't have the personal experience as well, it crumbles and fades away, and it doesn't give you the kind of security you think you get from it. So I prepared nothing tonight. I've prepared nothing other than personal experience because we're all human beings, and I think that's one thing we can all relate to. So I wanted to share some personal experience. I've been meditating formally, I guess, for about 5 years. I've been here at the Blue Lotus for about four. And when I started meditating, and actually I guess informally, I started meditating when I was very young. I just didn't know that's what it was. And I think that's important because the practice, quote unquote practice that I had as a child, I kept going back to it. And it was scary because as a child, I think we're a lot closer to truth because we're less conditioned to thinking who we are, who we should be, who other people want us to be. We're just kids. Just being. And so we're a lot closer to that truth. And I remember sitting in a chair and kind of playing with the raised fabric in the chair and just kind of staring at the wall and wondering who I was, why I was here, what's the point of all this. And I would just keep asking myself that, and I would get to a point, and I hadn't talked about this to anybody until only a few years ago because I really had no way to explain it, but As a kid, 9, 10 years old, I got to the point where I didn't have an answer to who I was, but I knew I wasn't what I thought I was. And it got to the point where I felt very detached from everything, my who I thought I was, what reality was. I mean, I was still experiencing everything around me just the way it was, but it just felt like it wasn't quite real. And then I got really scared and I would back away from that feeling. But I would always come back to it. It's like the only way I can describe it is like walking up to the edge of a cliff and just seeing the beautiful vista and then looking down and realizing you're an inch away from the edge. And you get scared and you back away. But you want to go back and see that vista. And that's what it was like. And it was very easy, again, as a child, to get to this place. But then it got harder and harder and harder. And it's because I think as we get more conditioned to who we think we're supposed to be and who others think we're supposed to be, it becomes much harder. But I never forgot that. And I'm working my way back towards it, to that edge of that cliff. But I have noticed that other things I've gained from my practice that are in a way much not as profound in that way, where it was very experiential, but experiential in another way, where again I've had some dark times and some scary times, and where I know that what I've gained from my practice is real. It's not that safety net I've created through ideas. And I'll share a little bit of that with you. There's a lot to share, but I'm not going to share all of it tonight. But some of the key points I think that maybe some of you can relate to in one way or another is, it was in June of this year, so not that long ago, I had a medical emergency. I'm a pretty active person. I work out regularly. I eat fairly healthy. You know, I take good care of myself. And I had some shortness of breath. And, you know, I'm a typical guy. And I've never had any serious health problems in the past. And at the time I was doing CrossFit, I was doing jiu-jitsu, and I was losing my breath walking from one room to the other, and I didn't understand it. I felt fine otherwise, no other symptoms. And then it was that Friday of that week, I noticed it on that Wednesday, and then by Friday of that week I was doing jiu-jitsu, and it was just very strange. I just couldn't catch my breath just doing warm-ups. It was very strange. But I kept doing it, and I kept, you know, rolling or wrestling with some of the other competitors, and something wasn't right. But I just kept going, and there was a nurse there that trains as well, and she kind of checked me over and asked me some different questions, and she said, "It doesn't make any sense. It sounds like you're having a pulmonary embolism, but it doesn't make any sense. You don't have any of these other things that would point to that." But she said you should go see your doctor. So I went through the weekend. Again, not very smart, but I did. Help people move some things, minor things like a folding table, and I had to stop halfway through because I couldn't catch my breath. So then on Monday, I called the doctor. They got me in on Tuesday, asked me all the same questions. They did a test, a blood test, and they said, "Stick by your phone, because if this blood test comes back, it'll point to potential problems." So long story short, I got that call. They said, "You need to go to the emergency room right away," which I did. I live in Burlington, Wisconsin, not too far from here. They ended up telling me that I had multiple embolisms in both lungs, as well as a saddle embolism, which is very dangerous because it puts strain on your heart. They transferred me up to St. Luke's in Milwaukee, which is the specialty center for pulmonology. And again, fast forwarding, it was 50-50. I didn't know if I was going to make it. And I wrote letters to my kids. Because I didn't know. I get emotional, but what was interesting about this whole process to this point, it hasn't changed, is I was okay with it. Other than the fact that I had a lot left I wanted to do in life. But I was okay with it. I wasn't scared. I wasn't angry. I could definitely, 5 years ago, I'd have felt very cheated. But I didn't feel that way. I felt calm. When they transferred me up in the ambulance, the guy in the back that was working on me, he said, are you feeling okay? And I'm like, I feel fine. He said, can you breathe okay? I'm like, yeah, right. I'm sitting still, I can breathe fine. And he says, can you see okay? I'm like, yeah, I can see fine. And he said, all right, well, your blood pressure is like 190 over 100 or something. It was through the roof. And I found out that the reason he was asking me this is because they have a blood thinner. It's kind of like a blood thinner nuke. And if things get bad enough, they hit you with that. But it thins your blood to the point where you could have an aneurysm or bleed out internally. So they don't want to do it unless they have to. But that I found out that's why he was asking me. If I would have answered yes to any of those, he probably would have hit me with that. Anyways, so on Wednesday morning, they did the procedure they put a catheter in through an artery in your groin, and it goes all the way up into your lungs, and it sucks these blood clots out, which was an interesting experience because you're awake for the whole thing, and they're asking you questions, and I'm as alert as I am right now talking to you, and there was probably a dozen people in the room, and they couldn't believe what they were pulling out of me. And it turns out I'm the clot king of Milwaukee. My pulmonologist said he's never pulled that many blood clots out of a living patient before. So lucky to say the least. And every doctor I've talked to since says, I don't know how you're alive right now. But, you know, and again, some people would take that... take that as, why me? And I do look at it that way, why me? But not as in, why do I have to put up with all this? I wouldn't trade this experience for anything. Because when you face that, and you shouldn't come out of it, but you do, well, everything's gravy after that, right? So I guess what I'm saying is that safety net, the ideas, this was never part of the plan. none of my intellectual training prepared me for that. But the experience did. And I think the experience that prepared me for that is when you get really quiet because you find out that all these things are observable. All these grand ideas we have, they're observable. The emotions that arise in you, they're observable. The pain, physical pain you feel is observable. The ideas that pop into your head during meditation. Again, meditation is training. And, you know, I used to get really frustrated when these ideas would pop in my head. It's like, I'm not disciplined enough. I'm not doing this right. But just by noticing how you're doing it, you're doing it. You're noticing the thoughts for what they are. They're not you. They're just thoughts. And everything is observable. And then it comes down to that question I was asking as a kid. Who am I? And that's who I am. I'm not those thoughts. I'm not this body. I'm not these emotions. But at the same time, I am. I am those things. But I'm... the deeper part of that is I'm what's observing those things. I'm a perspective... I'm a unique perspective of those things. When I was in the back of that ambulance and the guy was asking me all those questions, I felt like maybe I should feel bad. But I don't. Maybe, you know, so I really started observing. But I didn't have any of those issues he was asking me about. And then finally I asked, I thought like, well, maybe that's a problem. Maybe I should be more upset than I am. So I asked him, I said, when I was in the emergency room in Burlington, did they give me anything to like calm me down? And he said, they gave you baby aspirin. So it kind of hit me. I felt a friend of mine who's a little further down the self-realization path, I guess, if you want to call it that. You know, he's had his dark night of the soul as well. He lost everything. And he said during that period of his life, he felt like he was being held. And that's how I felt. So I can describe it. And maybe some of you can relate to that. Maybe you've lost somebody. Maybe you've had a scare. But it matters. The stuff we're doing here matters. And so I guess the big secret I can let you in on, you know, everybody wants to know what's the secret to enlightenment or what's the meaning of all this. And honestly, for me, I think I've found it. It's the question. There is no answer. When you're meditating and you get really still, there's no answers there. You know, if it's awareness, you're aware. All it is a big question mark. You're waiting. You're waiting to receive. And to me, that's the answer. It's the question itself. It's having that that childlike mind where you're just curious and you're just waiting for something, anything, doesn't matter what. You're just waiting to receive something. And that's it. That's the answer. And so, yeah, I mean, I didn't prepare anything, but if you guys got questions, you know, that's great. I probably don't have any answers, but yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've got two daughters, teenage daughters. So I don't think I need to say anything more, but it's the same thing, you know, as a parent, you see the roads are going down. You've been down some of those roads and you know they're not good roads and you know, you're not going to do anything to let them hurt themselves, but and this could be anybody in your life that you care about, but what I've come to realize is, and I guess maybe I'll get a little academic, I consider myself, you know, I find my wisdom wherever I can get it. I don't care what religion or what philosophy or if there's wisdom to be had, I'll take it. And frankly, I think they're all pointing to the same thing anyways. I don't know if any of you know the story of the prodigal son from the Bible. The son that goes out, there's two sons. One son stays home and is loyal to the father and does everything he's asked to do. The other son goes out and explores the world and, you know, disobeys his father, goes out, And then years go past, and he comes back, and the son, he's ruined. He has nothing. And the father takes him back in, open arms, and welcomes him back home, and throws him a big feast. And the son that stayed and that was loyal is upset. He's like, I've been loyal to you this whole time, and this is how you treat him. He's been disloyal. And I look at that parable a little differently now than when I learned it growing up. I was raised in a Christian tradition, and I think they're very similar. But I look at that now where it's like you have to, you know, that story I told when I was very young and I had this meditation practice. It was very pure, and it was very, a lot of things were happening, right, and more profound than I've ever experienced. But eventually I grew up and I lost some of that. And that, I look at that as being the prodigal son. Everybody's got their path. Everybody's got to go out and do their thing. And that is their practice. It may not look like my practice or your practice. It may not be a meditative practice. But life is a practice. And everybody has to find their own way. And they have to find their own practice. That's life. And honestly, when we meditate, or at least the way I look at it, it's practice. It's just, it's called a practice. It's not the game. Life is the game. You know, we're just practicing for the real thing. I think life is the real practice. So I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, it's hard. But sometimes you just got to let people go and figure it out for themselves. And that's their practice. That's their path. And eventually, we're all gonna come back home, like the prodigal son. There's no choice in that, right? At the end, there's an end to the road for everybody, and that's when I think there's no choice in it. Then you're gonna wake up, and it's gonna happen. It's just ideally you want it to happen before the end of the road. I think. Is that it? Answer anything? Hopefully something. Does anybody else have anything or comments? I appreciate everybody listening to me. I know it's wasn't part of the plan to get emotional, but, you know, plans never seem to quite fall into place the way they are intended, which is part of the path too, I guess.
Prior to your 5 years of meditation practice, if this had happened, if that medical incident had happened to you prior to that, what do you think your feelings would have been versus contentment?
I won't say contentment. Equanimity is probably a better term, because I didn't want to die, you know, and I wasn't, but I was, it was okay. That's the only way I can describe it. It was okay. Either way, I knew everything was going to be okay. And by that, I didn't mean, like, I know I'm going to live. It was, whatever's going to happen is okay. If this would have happened 5 years ago, I would have been terrified. I would have, but here's the thing, is I've been thinking about this stuff long before. You know, I had a conceptual idea that I accepted as truth, but it wasn't experience. And that changes everything. Again, you create this safety net with concepts and ideas, and they may make a ton of sense. And it may be irrefutable in your mind that that's right. But then when the experience hits and you don't have that experiential practice and all you have is your ideas, they become pretty empty at that point. So I think if this would have happened when all I had was my ideas, no matter how well formulated, yeah, it wouldn't have been good. I would have been terrible. But at the same, maybe it would have been different. I don't know. I mean, you can't say. I think maybe, you know, I know that I've read a lot of reports of near-death experiences. I was never at a point where I had any sort of, where I lost any alertness or consciousness or anything like that. But people who have, that I've read about, they do find a great deal of peace, even if they've had no practice, you know, whatsoever. So again, I think when you get to a certain part of the path, you got no choice. You're gonna find that peace, but sometimes it doesn't happen, you know. Again, these near-death experiences are people who have kind of gone, and then they brought them back, and they explain these experiences. So, you know, who knows? Who knows how it would have been? But based on what I know about myself, it would have been terrifying. It would have been, and I definitely would have felt, you know, this isn't fair. Why me? I work out. I eat right. I do all this stuff. Why? You know, this is bullshit, you know, pardon my language. I would have been mad. I would have been angry. It's not fair. But it, an experience like that does a lot to really strip the ego away, because I still can't answer anything. As a matter of fact, they still don't know why it happened. My situation was what was called an unprovoked embolism. And embolisms, there's probably 30 of them. But they still don't know. As a matter of fact, I had a CT scan this morning, and, you know, they don't know. It could be something very serious. It could be a blood disorder, clotting disorder. But I have no other indicators for why this. They just don't know.
How was your scan this morning? Are you
ready? I don't know. I'll find out next month, early next month. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But that's interesting too, because, you know, one of the possibilities, they don't think this is the case, but it's possible, is it could be cancer. And if it is, I do a lot of mental experiments. wow, what would that be like? And, you know, again, it's just one of those things where it's like, that's what it is. I shouldn't be here right now anyways. So I already got 6 more months than what I really am entitled to. So, you know, it is what it is. It's okay. So, well, I think I'm out of time. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to stick around afterwards. Otherwise, again, thank you very much for listening to my story.